Welcome, everybody, to The Lonely TARDIS, your journey through space and time, lords. I am Dolly Domofsky, as usual. I have not changed my face. I have not changed my canonical background. That lovely interstitial you heard there was from Marcus Beer.
I mean, let's face it, there's four of us. It's not a very lonely TARDIS, is it?
No, it's the farthest from lonely, especially with the minds we have in this TARDIS.
Somebody was around for the beginnings. Jeez.
There
change is since we titled Sean, this show, sir.
Sean Norton.
Hello.
Sean,
I remember when it was a very lonely TARDIS, actually.
That's true, yeah. It was just us two, I think.
It's a little, it's blurry. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Steven Strum is also joining us.
I am here bodily, if not in spirit. I'm going to announce right now that I am quitting the Lonely TARDIS until Stephen Moffat promises me that that glasses thing is not an ongoing gag and that was just a one-off like little thing. With, like, I thought it was at first, but then I saw people tweeting about it like, oh no, that's like, I really hope they don't keep that around, because that didn't even occur to me that that could be kept around as like the actual sonic device for the season. Oh my god.
Now I see why I had to return to this. Okay.
So, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Steven Strum has already stated his case preemptive to the beginning of the episode. First of all, we're all back together. Isn't that amazing?
Objection.
It's like the Beatles, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
John, Paul, George, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Jesus.
Yeah.
We're bigger than all of them.
Yeah, the TARDIS is bigger on the inside than all of them.
Better than sex, that's what we are.
Yes. Oh, if you could just lean back in your bed right now, listeners, put on those headphones.
Put on your VR headsets.
Grab that sonic screwdriver, put it on low. And listen
whoa.
Lonely TARDIS.
Where are you going? Where are you going?
Let's get wibbly wobbly with our time climbing.
Oh god.
I don't know if I'd want to listen to an entire hour long Marcus Beer wibbly wobbly sex tape. Doctor Who sex tape.
I missed two episodes and I come back to a bunch of wibbly wobbly perverts.
And then the Zygon appeared.
I've got a regeneration in my pants with your name on it.
I got one in my hands, which is totally fine.
Well, all right. Okay.
So we are going to talk about...
Glad to have you back, Sean.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you back. Man. Save us.
I can tell. I really was needed.
We're going to talk about...
You came back.
Yeah.
Then we all agreed with each other a lot more.
That's true. We're going to talk about Season 9, Episode 2. And which was The Witch is Familiar. It was the second half of the season premiere. Last week, of course, we spoke of The Magician's Apprentice and the... I guess people are telling me it wasn't a prequel. It was a scene or something. I forget what. And correction, actually, thank you everybody for tweeting at us and letting us know that it's Oswin and not Osgood.
Well, there you go.
Now we know.
Okay. Yeah. Now we know.
But she was good.
Yes, yes.
Doing what Wikipedia couldn't since.
Exactly.
Look, we got the Oz part right. I mean, what do you expect? This is an amateur podcast. I mean, seriously, if you want full 100% fact-checking, start paying.
Fact-checking will ruin this podcast, let me tell you right now.
I don't know. I type in Osgood into Google, and the first hit I get is the TARDIS Wikia. Osgood parentheses, Day of the Doctor. So...
Fact-checking has ruined this podcast already. Now we've lost.
You're trying to tell me everything I believe is a lie, so I need to know.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Our listeners are the only true liars here.
I mean, for all I know, this isn't a real Wikia, but, you know.
Oh, but maybe the listeners created it. They are. I heard somewhere that they tend to lie about things, so I created that as a red herring for you.
I do love that you posted that, Sean, by the way. Thank you for adding to the notes of Osgood. Maybe it's Oswin Osgood or something. I don't know.
There is somebody. Well, I mean, like
Clara Oswald.
Clara Oswald, but her like her first appearance, she had like a bunch of different names, right? Like she had like two middle names or something, and there was like Osgood, Oswald, Oswin.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So we're, you know what? In other words, we're all right. We're all correct. The kids are all right. The witch is familiar. The second episode last week was fairly positive. Even by one Marcus Beer. I want to let Sean talk right now because he listened to last week's episode, the discussion, and well, Sean, why don't you tell me what you were just – tell everybody what you were just telling me before the show started.
Well, you know, I felt bad. I missed a couple of episodes there. But then I listened to the show, and I came back to save everybody from the rampant negativity and hating on things.
You started clapping your hands and then started saying, like, hey, we want some new day.
And then
no negativity.
It turns out it is a new day because Marcus really liked the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I just
do you remember the caveats I issued on the last episode? That, you know, see how this week's go before I really sort of like just, you know, fully rate the episode.
Sure.
Let me just say, I'm glad our Moffat apologist is back in the house.
I welcome you to hate on the 20-plus minutes of Dr. Davros we got this week. Please tell me how you could hate on that. Let's go right into it.
I don't hate everything about that episode. I think it was an uneven episode.
Sure.
This past weekend's?
Yes, the new one. It was an uneven episode.
Well, let me do a quick recap of the plot for everybody who's catching up, and then we'll dive into that. So we continue from where we left off last week, in that we discover that Missy and Clara were not zapped out of existence. In fact, there is they figured out a way to zap themselves into freedom. I guess all about timing and focusing the Dalek energy, something or other. But
explain that one away. Come on, explain that one away before we even get into the recap. Let's talk about the pre-credit sequence.
It's the vortex manipulators. Gotta love them.
They took the energy, figured out a way to channel it into their otherwise dead time vortex manipulators, and explained away not only how they got on the last episode, but how she got on the last season. It's great.
All right. Now this is the first and probably the biggest issue I have with this episode, because it's one of those things that it's like interesting how they're tackling this. And let me say, the charisma between Clara and Missy, they are a great double act. I mean, they do bounce off each other. I mean, it's like almost like role reversal of the Doctor and Clara last season, where she was the smart one and he was the idiot child. Now Missy is the, you know, she's the grown up and Clara's the idiot child.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's talk about this thing where it's like, imagine the Doctor. He's being chased by 50 different invisible assassins, but who are indestructible, yet he managed to steal one of their teleportation devices, but it's out of power. Okay. All right. So they're chasing him around. And that set, by the way, looks like a set from, I think it's the... was it the episode where the TARDIS explodes? It's the Pandorica opens at the beginning, where River Song is stealing the painting from the futuristic Queen's place. It looks exactly the same, by the way. But I digress. Budgets. What?
Budgets. Reusing that stuff. Go on.
So all right, the doctor does this. He ducks about. I mean, one, he gets stuff, you know, he steals this from these invisible, unkillable robot assassins. So good luck on that one. God knows how he managed that. But then he ducks as they're all firing laser bolts at him, holds his sonic screwdriver up like, you know, like the electricity guy flying a fucking kite.
Mm-hmm.
And then uses
electricity guy.
Yeah, what's his name? Not Tesla, the other one.
Benjamin Franklin?
That's the one. The one who's on the your crazy money. He uses that to charge up his teleportation device, and boom, off we go. Okay, that's kind of interesting, a little flawed. And then they use that to explain how Missy and Clara get away. or got away from the last episode. Now, if one of you can explain to me how I'm in, you know, that I've missed a little something here, I will then sort of like step back and say, oh, I missed it. I got it wrong. But I just watched the episode for a second time about an hour and a quarter ago. I don't remember that when Missy and Clara first teleported last week to go find the doctor, Missy was the one with the vortex manipulator. Clara didn't have a vortex manipulator. Missy held her hand and they went boom. Yet when when they were shot last week, Missy was shot first, and then Clara ran away and was shot later. And Clara didn't have a vortex manipulator. So that's the first. That's the first thing of like, okay, this doesn't work for me. The second thing, you see the doctor when he's waving his sonic screwdriver, using it like the, you know, like the lightning fork to charge everything. That's great. Both Missy and Clara were hit full chest or in the back, full on, no force fields. And yet this managed to charge the vortex manipulators, the teleportation devices that moved them away. Did I miss something in last week's episode where Clara seemed to pull a teleportation device out of her ass and become covered in some sort of force field type mesh that then allows her to convert Dalek energy beams into stuff that will charge and run a teleporter?
Yes.
Yes. When, what was that?
So I watched it again today as well. And when they went back to the medieval, whatever it was, 1100s, whatever, she slaps her wrist before they time travel. Now, I don't know if she put her vortex, like another one on her, or if she, Clara, came to that meeting with one. But she does have a throwaway line after that saying that the vortex manipulators are kind of like, you know, bad time travel or whatever, but that Clara's is synced to hers. So that's how they both wound up going to the medieval spot in the first place. And then, assuming she has it on her wrist the whole time, it kind of explains away the fact that they both got teleported out because it was still synced to Missy's. Now, I don't know where the little, you know, sleight of thumb stuff came away where Missy programmed it to do the Dalek energy thing, but there was a throwaway line in the last episode saying that they both were wearing it.
Okay, so the throwaway line apart, it still doesn't explain how they get shot in the back. Oh, God, Clara gets shot in the back a full, what, minute or whatever it is after Missy because she turns to run. And it just seems that this interesting exposition that Moffat set up is just it's tossed away again on one of his, like, oh, I've got this great idea, I'm writing this great idea, I'm halfway through, and it's still a great idea, and oh, fuck, I don't have an ending.
Or I guess a beginning in this case, huh?
He has a beginning, he has a middle, and it's like he gets to this... I feel sorry for his wife. I mean, how can he have kids when he... How can he have kids when he never reaches climax? So anyway, that was the thing that pissed me off the most about the start of about the start of this episode, because it ruined the perfectly great chemistry. Like I said, Missy and Clara. Missy is eminently enjoyable this season. That's two episodes in. Michelle Gomez absolutely nailed it.
Yes,
and you know, I'm sure we will talk more about, you know, their interactions further on during the show, but. Yeah, I thought she was deliciously evil and psychotic, almost you know, sometimes Joker-esque, and I loved it.
So the just to bounce off of Sean's note, it did look like they both had vortex manipulators in the previous episode, Missy and Clara. Missy slapped it on Clara's wrist, as at least what I'm reading in Wikipedia, the Bastion of All Hope. But still, you would have to be absolutely perfectly timed to let that happen. Anyways, I digress. I kind of agree with Marcus in that respect. But it's an out, I guess. So Clara and Missy escape. They end up finding their way into the Dalek sewers, which aren't necessarily sewers. They're a graveyard where Daleks go to decompose. Daleks never really die. They just kind of keep falling apart till they're liquid. And they look like poo, which is just a wonderful scene because throughout the episode we see Daleks bubbling up through stuff, and it's just like, you know, my basement flooded a couple weeks back, and this I'm wondering now if it was actually the Dalek sewer system coming up from my sump pump, but
no, it was the Dali sewer system.
It was the Dali sewer system. Dalek Bohr. Maybe he'll make a return. So they're making their way back into the you know, Davros's lair, I guess you could say. Meanwhile, the doctor manages to rip Davros out of his wheelchair and becomes Doctros. You guys like that? Doctros.
Nope.
And
oh, sorry, I'm holding on to my sides in case they split.
Exactly. And he's trying to get the Daleks to find Clara and Missy. What's interesting is that once all that takes place and he's kind of tricked by, I think it was Colony Sarf, which is all those the snake dude, still a really cool effect. He's ripped out. He's taken out of that wheelchair. And then Davros tricks the doctor into basically reanimating the Dalek, or giving energy to the Daleks by saying, "Hey, doctor, you know, I respect you," or I'm paraphrasing right now. "You know, you're actually right, but am I right for wanting to save my race?" And he kind of gets the doctor to bend on compassion. "So I just want to see the sunset just one more time, Doc. Just one more time." And the doctor falls victim to that evil ploy and hooks up Davros to himself, essentially. And Davros says, "Ah, gotcha. This thing was just a giant ploy to get you to, you know, make hybrid Dalek Time Lords, which are more, you know, powerful than anything before. Yada, yada." Unbeknownst to Davros, the other old decrepit sewer Daleks, can we call them sewer Daleks? Bubble up and revolt against the current Daleks. Doctor and Missy basically escape. So in a nutshell, that's the way the cookie crumbles this episode. There's a lot of interesting things I felt. They blew up the TARDIS, but no, they didn't blow up the TARDIS. Just kidding. It was the HADS system, the Hostile Action Displacement System. The sonic sunglasses, which we'll get to here, and the whole idea of Time Lord regeneration. I mean, we see this type of thing. Are we at Doctor number 16 now, or 15 all of a sudden, if he's able to regenerate just a little bit? I'm not quite sure.
I feel like it would take off on the end than it would moving okay. forward. You know what I mean? The way joked about it, losing a leg or just being very short, it seemed like if he has a set amount of regeneration energy for however many incarnations, it would...
And then finally, you know, one last thing that I thought was kind of interesting, besides Missy, this is all sort of Missy's ploy to somehow get, you know, power over the doctor, because she's, again, not dead. She's cornered by the Daleks, but has a plan. I like the idea of her shoving Clara into a Dalek, which reminded me very much of Clara's first episode.
I was kind of surprised that they didn't do more with that, that they didn't, like, I felt like by the end when we were, like, reaching the point where, like, the Doctor and Clara ran into each other, I felt like the Doctor might have some kind of moment where he recognized the situation that way, and not just, like, I don't know, it's some weird tie back to the Doctor Davros meeting each other on the battlefield thing, which ultimately felt kind of unnecessary when it was all said and done. As much as I like the hand mines as just a general concept, it didn't feel like it was super necessary to move this plot forward in any real way. Even, like, the whole concept of, like, the battle between the Doctor and Davros, like, discussing, like, would you commit genocide to the Daleks? And then the Doctor's like, no, I couldn't, you know, have that much power and, like, do that sort of thing, like he always does. And then it ends with him kind of doing that and, like, killing all like a whole million Daleks again or something like that. But it's okay as long as it's not all of them, so there's more Daleks for him to kill in the future, I guess. I don't know.
So here is a talking point, all right, that I'm curious to get everybody's opinion on, and that's the Doctor saving Davros, right? He saves him essentially three times this episode, right? This season opener. Last week we showed the Doctor arriving in Skarrow and throwing the sonic screwdriver to who he didn't know was Davros at the time. Then he disappears. This episode we see him not only trying to save Davros by plugging everything into him, to get him to live a little bit longer to see the sunset. But then at the very end, we see him grabbing Davros's hand as a kid and just running through the two lips, you know, on Ascaro. How do you guys feel about that? Because it's, I'm personally conflicted a little. And what I mean by that is, you know, he has several chances to end the greatest. I mean, he can essentially pull genocide right now. But it really wouldn't be genocide, would it? Because he'd just be, I won't say he'd just be killing one little boy, but he would be, the Daleks have never been created, so there isn't necessarily a genocide to take place. But
I don't know. Like I said, I thought the whole kind of subplot there was actually the most unnecessary part of the show. I had like a whole joke that I was going to be pulling here on Sean in a minute, talking about how I hated this show. I absolutely hated it. And then asking Sean specifically, am I a good man? And then telling him that it was all a trick at the end. Because that stuff I actually liked. The interplay between Davros and the Doctor as it was. I just thought that the excuse that they used to get the Doctor with Davros was just literally because they had, it's a two-part season, like everything's two-parters, and they had maybe like a one part and a half parts of an episode written here, like of a concept to work off of here. And so they needed to like add a bunch of like workaround material on that stuff, because that stuff that felt super unnecessary. All you'd need to do to have the Doctor on the planet with Davros is like for the Doctor to get a message from Davros. That would actually make more sense, because like you would think that the Doctor would be pretty freaked out by the fact that Davros was sending him a message, given that like Davros was supposed to be dead, and then we'd maybe get some kind of resolution on why Davros is alive after the issue with the Stolen Earth and everything like that, which we have talked about in private several times, like what was going on there. I thought that was incredibly unnecessary. I liked the interplay between them. I liked the idea that the Doctor like gave him a good shot. He gave him a good chance. I liked the fact that Davros is completely irredeemable and shows that afterwards. I liked that the Doctor wasn't dumb enough to fall for Davros being completely irredeemable, but kind of like it could have gone either way. Like the Doctor positioned himself in kind of classic Doctor fashion in a place where he can do the most good. Right. But if that good would turn against him, he has he knows a way to back out of it. He has a plan ahead of time to screw over the bad guys. In this case, being, you know, poisoning the Daleks with their own dead. I still don't get why, like, it's the most bald-faced, like, well, we can't kill off the Daleks. Like, it would make no sense. But we also want to have our cake and eat it, too, by having a story where the Doctor is yet again put into the position where he has the chance to destroy an entire species. Like, we even get shots of, like, we were going back to that story with Tom Baker with, like, in the previous episode, talking about, like, if you had the chance to kill Hitler, yada, yada, yada. And, like, so they're even acknowledging that this is an eternal question for the Doctor. But what I don't understand is, like, why the Doctor just keeps putting himself in situations where he can kill a bunch of Daleks and then give them time to come back again and destroy more people. And it's calling into question like a couple of things about like the Doctor's morality from my end that I feel like Clara should be talking about more. And I talked about this last episode too. Like, why is Clara not calling the Doctor out on like letting Missy go after she just murdered two fools right in front of her face? Why is she not calling out the Doctor more on Missy's actions killing her fucking boyfriend?
Why is she hanging out with Missy and trusting her when she, you know, essentially murdered thousands of people on Earth?
Yeah, why is she? Well, the reason is to go get with the Doctor, or to go find the Doctor and save the Doctor and help the Doctor. But at this point, the Doctor has not given himself. I don't think the Doctor is holding up his end of the relationship. For as awesome as Clara and Missy being together was, and seeing those two characters interplay off of each other, Missy is like holding her own completely, and then Missy, yes, but like Clara is holding up her end completely, doing everything for the Doctor, and like completely like being clever and quick and smart and dangerous at times and stuff like that. And the Doctor is just like this kind of intergalactic douchebag right now. Like he's just kind of like this. What's the word I'm looking for? Like ambivalent. Like he says he's the good guy, but then he wants to be the good guy, but he doesn't do the things that would make him a good guy. All he does is clean up after his own messes a little bit after they're said and done. But like he lets the collateral damage in the process just pile up and pile up and pile up. And it just doesn't get addressed by him or Clara or anyone. And I don't get it.
You know, Missy was almost very doctor-like when you think about it, right? She was very quick, had a plan, and when that plan didn't work, had a secondary plan, and then you realize that there was a big plan overall that she had the whole time, which is something that a doctor would definitely do. Maybe it's just in Time Lord genetics that they act like this.
Well, I think Missy was slightly different, and I think this is kind of core. I think they're kind of establishing what is core to the Dr. Missy dynamic right now, is that I didn't think that she necessarily had a bunch of backup plans so much as that she just kind of always had, like, she, every time she found herself in a given situation, she could come up with a plan immediately. And, like, we set up that the doctor is always having, like, a backup plan with the regeneration energy and all that stuff, and we know that Missy didn't see that coming, because Missy is like, oh, I recognize that face. Like, she's like, oh, the doctor's got a plan this whole time. And whereas with Missy at the end of the episode, we see her talk to the Daleks and saying, like, oh, I just had a very clever idea. Like, presumably she's going to be queen of the Daleks, or she's going to be working with the Daleks, or helping the Daleks find Gallifrey, or something like that right now. But she's very much like an ad hoc. Like, I get the impression, at least I think they're trying to make the impression, that she is very much just like, she does what she does when she does it, and doesn't think very far ahead of that, and that is kind of part, like, core to the conflict between those two characters. She doesn't think about people. She doesn't think about the consequences of her actions, because she knows that she can get herself out of it at any given moment.
It's very Joker-like, like we mentioned last week. It's very Joker-like. But now I think there's almost a little hint of a Riddler thrown in there, too. You know, she's I say that because, and I'm alluding to Batman enemies and stuff, in that the Riddler isn't – so the Joker is the arch-nemesis of – Batman, and Davros right now seems to be the new arch nemesis of the Doctor, and the Riddler is kind of the secondary character that goes in there, pushes Batman's buttons, and disappears for a while, and comes back later on and pushes buttons and disappears, but is never really outright super dangerous. And I think that's I'm afraid of Missy turning into the Riddler instead of the Joker, I guess that's what I'm saying, where she's not as dangerous anymore to all of humanity or all of, you know, life. She's more of just a needle in the doctor, and, you know, a needle in the doctor's side.
And it depends on what, you know, like, and the I think the thing that Missy has most in common with the Joker, if nothing else, and I think part of why we keep coming back to that, even though the characters aren't necessarily that similar in a lot of way, in, like, on their faces, because I actually don't, like, the Joker is very much a character that always plans ahead of time and, like, have the fun of reading their stories and whatnot is, like, finding out what they've got planned. I think what's interesting about the comparison is that Doctor Who is one of the only shows that can do this. You know, it's like this and, like, Star Wars and, like, Star Trek, and even those not so much, because they don't run in the same way. It's just that, like, these characters have been around so long that they are constantly being reinvented by the people in charge of them at any given moment. And so, you know, the Missy and the Joker and, like, the current Joker of the comics, if you read the comics right now, are, like, fairly similar in, you know, in certain ways, in that they, like, are very open about their, like, feelings about their, you know, nemeses and whatnot. But, like, in the past, they haven't been necessarily that way. But it's just that, like, seeing them go through these different transformations, like, the regenerations are over and over and over, and, like, seeing how that plays out in a context outside of comic books, it's kind of interesting, and it's kind of also the only other place you can take your mind is to something else that's been running for 60 years.
Yep. Well, you and I have been talking quite a bit. I'm interested to hear more from Mark. And I'm not shutting you up, by the way, Steven, but I'm
better be.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, like, it's going to keep going.
So I'm interested in what Marcus and Sean have to say about this whole saving Davros and how Missy fits into this new kind of triangle of Time Lord and Dalek.
I'll let Moffat boy go first. Wow. Did I upset him?
I think he's muted, actually.
He's currently muted, yeah.
Let me yes, unmute from his side. Oh, he crashed out on us.
All right, see.
No, I just got tired of listening to me.
Yeah.
He ran before I could unleash.
Why don't you go ahead, Marcus, and then Sean will join us back here in a second.
Yeah, he'll come back.
He'll always come back.
Let me just say a couple of things. I mean, first of all, if, you know, Davros is the Joker and Missy is the Riddler, let's face it, there's only one villain who's going to end up ending the Doctor, and that's Moffat, because he's the bane of my existence.
Oh,
I mean, let's face it. From now on, I mean, you know, could you imagine being like, you know, if they had a, you know, enemies of the Doctor sort of like get together over, you know, scotch and nibbles.
They did. It was called the Pandorica Opens.
I'm talking about, you know, a more, you know, more recent, because obviously, you know, this is obviously later in the Doctor's lifetime.
Okay.
And, you know, Davros says, you know, I didn't have to chase him all the way across the galaxy. I didn't have to invade anywhere. All I had to do was ask him to come, and he turned up. I was like, that's where we've been going wrong all these years. The Cyberlead's like, we should have invited him for a cup of cocoa. And I guarantee you that this entire season of Doctor Who, every 2 weeks, there's going to be a new villain saying to the Doctor, oh, I stubbed my toe, can you come?
Yep, I'm afraid of that happening.
I can't scratch my back properly, can you come? And the Doctor turns up every time. Yeah, it's... I have issues. I think they wasted the whole, you know, initial, you know, Dr. Baby Davros thing, because that was such a cool intro last week. Mm-hmm. It was like a what the fuck moment. And, you know, last week's episode was still, you know, pretty good. And I was hoping that with, you know, half the episode being taken up between the Doctor and Davros, that we'd get a little more. You know, we get a little more closure, but again, we don't do that with Moffat, do we? I mean, we never get the closure. I mean, this has been the gripe every season that the man, I mean, admittedly, it's not his story to close this time because, you know, the Stolen Earth and End of Time, or whatever it was. Stolen Earth.
End of Time, right? Yeah.
Yeah. That was the, you know, that was a Russell T. Davis extravaganza. So, you know, Moffat maybe felt he didn't have to justify it. And it's just...
What kind of clothes are you looking for? I lost.
You know, I was looking for, you know, as we discussed, that little bit of, all right, Davros, what have you been up to? Because the last time the Doctor saw you, my spare Doctor had just committed, you know, genocide and wiped you out. It turns out that was the first time, because obviously the second time was in the 50th anniversary where we genocided your asses again because all the Daleks were around Gallifrey, and then we, poof, Gallifrey gone. You all got caught in the crossfire like a Charlie Chaplin movie. And, so now we're going to genocide you all over again. But I'd just like to know, you know, what have you been up to since, you know, how do you keep on avoiding these? What are your secrets? I mean, you know, this
I mean, like, you can say the same thing for the Daleks themselves, right? Thinking back on it, the fact that, like, Davros is alive from that, when we had, like, 12 Daleks running around in World War II, in, like, Blitz London, hanging out with Winston Churchill and everything like that, not that crazy in retrospect, I
but
guess.
At least they kind of explained that away, right? I mean, they mentioned offhand, I think, at that point that, like, they fell through with Schism of Time or whatever they did. It went back to the well for that one over and over again, but at least they mentioned it. This thing, though, and I'm actually in agreement with you guys, I'm a little surprised that they kind of just wave it away, and he's just like, well, I'm dying at some point in the timeline. But maybe I shouldn't be, because they did the same thing when Missy showed up last year. There's no mention of how she got out of all the End of Tenet stories and anything. So
I genuinely think that the Doctor, or that Moffat thinks that the best excuse, or the only excuse that he needs to have Missy and Davros and the rest of the Daleks alive is the fact that they always came back in the old days, and he's gone on record during interviews and said, like, I love that when that happens, because that was a different time for cinema, for a different time for TV and stuff like that, where you could just have a character come back to life for no apparent reason and nobody would really address it. And I think that he thinks that that is a perfectly justifiable reason for it to continue existing now, the fact that it used to happen in the 60s and the 70s. Like, I don't agree with that, but I think that is his logic. I think that the show has changed.
Racism were prevalent in those periods, too. So is Moffat a racist and a sexist as well? Is he okay with that? I mean, seriously.
There's no stretch there, man. Nope.
That's... Well, no, I mean, Moffat's stretching the point, because at the end of the day, during the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s, when the series first aired, it was a more naive time on a lot of things. I mean, you know, we didn't have the internet. The audience wasn't as well informed.
Especially with science fiction. Science fiction on TV was just like, it was literally the Wild West. Like, science fiction on TV started as, like, Gene Roddenberry coming to CBS and saying, like, it'll be like a Western in space. Like, they didn't have any idea of what to do back then. Like, the rules were basically, like, it's science fiction, it's basically magic.
Basically, I mean, as soon as, you know, Doctor Who took off, or, you know, I think, look, let's face it, it was 1977 and Star Wars. Star Wars really brought it home to the mainstream. Yeah, we'd seen, you know, we'd seen Star Trek on TV. It didn't do well the first time around, and then was, you know, in the reruns picked up. Doctor Who had always been bobbling along, but it wasn't so much, you know, for as much as there was science fiction, there was, you know, history to count, you know, the historical episodes to counterpoint that, and they didn't want to do, you know, scary monsters covered in bubble wrap every week. So I look, I think he's being a bit disingenuous where he's saying, oh, look, you know, that's why you know, that's what it used to be like. So that's what I want to do now. I think it's because Mr. Moffat is a bad writer all by himself. And I've said this before, and I'm not going to say it again, because it's just so, you know, I'm sure it's so annoying.
Yes, you are. To hear. Yes, you are. You're going to say it again and again. And that's okay.
But,
that's okay.
It would have been nice to have that little bit of exposition to say, this is how I survived. You know, why hasn't he touched back to the, you know, to the end, stolen Earth? Or is the stolen Earth in his, you know, in his future now that he's been kind of regenerated by the Doctor? Who, I mean, by the way, again, this is a new thing, because Moffat likes fucking with canon. You know, this turn on, turn off the regenerations. He's done it a couple of times now. He did it in Let's Kill Hitler, where River Song gave away her extra regenerations because the Doctor had been poisoned. But I mean, this whole turn on, turn off, like the clapper, is a little bit, again, it's a little bit new. Maybe it's because the Doctor now has unlimited regenerations, because he has all the regeneration power from, you know, from the Christmas special of 2 years ago.
I don't think if the Davros, that this is in Davros's, past or like before Stolen Earth, because he does specifically say that, like, our conflict survived the time war. Like, the way they talk about it makes it sound like they were kind of addressing, like, the fact that they had run into each other post time war before. I feel like if this was, like, in that kind of vein of the, like, jumping around in time and stuff like that, it would have been more addressed. Like, that would have been such a big thing to talk about and to address. Like, I think.
Okay, well, you know, I think they could have put something in there. You know, especially when they were, you know, they were more doing some more of the, you know, the inane stuff.
There's so much, like, wasted time in these two episodes. I'm telling you, like, there's so much stuff that they could have been doing instead of what they did with, like, the jumping backwards in time to Davros as a baby stuff. I don't know.
It went nowhere. I mean, you know, unless they've got something later in the season to show how this affected Davros, you know.
Now, but it did go somewhere. It went full circle. But the problem I think a lot of people have is that it went full circle in a predictable way. Nobody thought the TARDIS was going to be destroyed. Nobody thought Clara and Missy were dead. Although, hell of a hook for the end of, you know, for the beginning of a season. But you got to remember that narrative-wise, up until the point he goes back at the very end, he left. Like, and there were weeks he was spending around misery and, like, just ashamed of himself. So up until that very end of the narrative, he wasn't going back. Like, this was the side of the Doctor that he was wrestling with for weeks and weeks in our time, and who knows what else he was doing. So, yeah, he goes back and closes the circle, and then it turns out he might not be the reason Davros grows up, become evil. Some people are just evil, and that is whatever. But narratively speaking, it did go somewhere. It showed him wrestling with this. It showed him making realizations as he went through this whole encounter with him. So it wasn't just throwaway stuff. It just went somewhere, and then somewhat predictably went back to where it should be, because at the end of the day, he wrestles with this, you know, morally, but then comes to the conclusion that he still needs to do what's right, even though he knows what's coming years and centuries later. So I think it's unfair to say it didn't go anywhere. It just didn't go places people wanted it to.
It didn't go necessarily any good places, like, or go far enough, maybe, like, at least from my own personal perspective. Just
that's fine, but I think it's disingenuous to say it didn't go anywhere. We have a doctor here who constantly wrestles with these inner morality questions and if he's a good man and stuff like that. And there was a time there where he wasn't. Like, he bailed.
That's my point here, is that, like, if the question we're asking is, am I a good man? The answer is no, you fucko. Like, you run around and you, like, leave these people behind. And I'm just not that interested in his...
What people? Who was left behind?
Everyone on Earth, every time that the Doctor, and literally anyone that is ever killed by the Daleks or the Master or Missy or anyone that the Doctor leaves alive when he has the chance to kill them constantly because put them in a cell somewhere or, do something to stop these people and then, never thinks twice about these, dead people that he's, leaving in his wake and, leaving behind and not tell and, knows that these people are alive and out there but then lets the world believe that they're still alive. So that they can go run around and do whatever they want, and nobody will even know that they're coming.
Can I just say that I think this topic was dealt with way better in Genesis of the Daleks, when the Doctor is holding, when Tom Baker is holding the two wires, and he says, "Do I have the right? Do I have the right to end?" And I'm going to start paraphrasing, but it's that, do I have the right to, commit genocide, stop these things before they're born, or, And then I think it's David Tennant also taps in on it against in Stolen Earth, where he says, how many billions of planets came together to fight the Daleks, people who would have been natural enemies or not contacted each other, but they came together to fight the Daleks. And how do you weigh that up?
Better, though, than coming to the conclusion at the end of this episode that mercy is important, that even knowing when you come across the child version of your future, one of your archenemies, that mercy is still the way to go. True to yourself and being true to these qualities. For 100%, I revere the old stuff. I think it's the best that who was, but I don't think we should discount how this story ended because it's the same kind of ultimate rap. I mean, you could tell that Moffat loves it. This whole thing is a swan song and inspired by that. So I just don't understand why we wouldn't count this. Not to say it was as good, but
dude, I got no doubt that Moffat loves everything he writes. I'm sure he masturbates over it 15
times.
Not what
I said, but okay.
But all right, let's go. Let's talk about this mercy thing and the fact that the Doctor's maybe put mercy into the he put the word into their vocabulary by doing this act of going back to rescue Davros.
Bizarre.
It's not the first time we've heard a Dalek say mercy. Let's go back to the part two of the Pandora, the Big Bang. Pandora opens part two. A Dalek begs River Song for mercy.
That is actually a kind of a good point. I mean, it works.
But the Doctor never heard that. So up to this point, he never knew that was a thing. And if it does wind up being in their subconscious for generations, and it comes out then and it comes out now we know why it came out then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually think that is actually a fine explanation. And actually, I kind of want to... I'm not disagreeing with you on this.
Believe me, there's stuff I agree with, the Davros stuff. But at the same time, I think that there's some good stuff here. I think there's some stuff that's true to the core of what the show and the character have always been.
And I actually wanted to say, too, that I actually kind of like your bit about Mercy. Taking it a step farther, taking it away from, why does the Doctor kill a lot of Daleks but then doesn't completely wipe out their entire species? That is mercy. He brings them to the brink of death to say, mm-hmm. Their punishment, saying, no, if you do this, I will be there to stop you from doing these things that you are doing. I won't
constantly
completely wipe
that
you
they're
up.
Irredeemable by their own choices.
I kind of like that idea. I think that it's then just the Doctor, I think... Every time that the Doctor has run into the several hundred characters that tell him no, that's fucking stupid. I think they're totally justified in saying that. I just think that this episode needed a counterbalance. I think Clara, especially, needed to be the character who came in and said it had some kind of say of her own and said no, that was the wrong choice, or you made a different a bad decision. To show them mercy, to show them to let them continue living and stuff like that.
I don't think he showed them mercy.
I did. I think he did by not wiping out their entire species, instead of just wiping out a whole bunch of them on Skaro, instead of committing complete genocide. I think that is his version of mercy. I think that is that is the message that he is imparting, is his mercy is, I will beat you down every single time that you show up in my vision, but I won't completely wipe you out. And maybe one day you'll learn something from that. Obviously the Daleks won't ever learn anything from that, because they're the fucking Daleks. And then they've kind of, even now going back to Daleks of Manhattan, as what a fucking dumb episode that was. That was at least an episode where, poorly, admittedly, the writers tried to address the idea that the Daleks we're coming to the conclusion that, like, if we keep doing what we're doing, the Doctor is just going to keep coming and keep wrecking our shit. So we need to do something different. And then the writers wrote that horrible, horrible fucking, like, hybrid Dalek storyline. But they,
yeah, if anything should scare you, it's the mention of a hybrid in this episode with that continuity back there, because that's terrifying.
Well, that's, you know, it gave the Time Lords nightmares, so it must have been pretty scary.
Can I throw in an example of where I think this is? I think it's just it's gotten so tired over the last 10 years of the reboot in particular that every time the Daleks turn up, it's got to be an, you know, massive genocidal ending every time the Daleks turn up, the fourth or fifth. And I mean, it's getting to the stage where somebody who knows the Doctor needs to grab him by his lapel, shake him, and say, "Do you know what you're doing? You are like a doctor who cuts out most of the cancer cells and then says to the rest of them, well, if you behave now, there won't be a problem. But if you don't behave and you carry on killing people, I'll come back and cut out a little bit more of you." Yeah. I think if they stopped doing the genocide and stopped doing that, this is the end of the Daleks, so they won't be back again until next time. It's like, deal with individual Dalek pods.
Dalek.
You know, I mean, one of the best episodes was Dalek. Season one of the reboot with Eccleston.
Absolutely, 100% the best Dalek episode of Modern Who.
Yes.
I mean, it was great. And that was because it took what we knew, isolated it, put it in a new environment, and then we were like, oh, okay, this is kind of cool. We didn't deal with the genocidal blah, 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 loopy endings. I mean, Asylum of the Daleks last season, I rewatched it. The season before. I rewatched it recently, and it wasn't that bad. Again, it had some interesting ideas of the Daleks dealing with their demons. But they just got to stop with this. This is the biggest and darkest battle ever, because let's count the ways, first of all. Parting of the ways, end of season two, when the Cybermen and the Daleks get sucked into the rift. So that was the first time all the Daleks were sucked away after the Time War, when they were all supposed to be destroyed and in a time-locked bubble. Then we had the Stolen Earth, where what was left of the Daleks that was being... Oh, actually, no, it wasn't that. Before that, Bad Wolf.
Yeah.
We had Daleks back at the end of the first season. Billy Exploded. Piper stares into the TARDIS core and then disperses the Daleks to atoms. So that's the first time. Second time, I just said after that. Third time, Stolen Earth. How many others have we had since? Help me out here.
God, they bring themselves back from the brink in Daleks Take Manhattan. I don't know exactly how they did that, because there's only like three of them left. It was like the Cult of Skaro.
Skaro who escaped Torchwood. So yes. They're the ones who didn't get sucked in. They were emergency temporal shifted. So it wasn't, perhaps it wasn't quite genocide-y, but those three shifted. What else
and
we
that
got?
That one guy survived to the Stolen Earth, the like Dalek whatever
Dalek
his name
is. Khan,
yeah. In the Matt Smith season 5 episode, they just ran away. They made it out. They didn't explode or anything like that. With a new Dalek paradigm that has literally never paid off in any way whatsoever.
Correct.
The Skittles.
Mm-hmm.
Taste the rainbow of Dalek-y flavor.
literally the only thing that we've ever seen come out of that is like the Dalek, like the Supreme Dalek or whatever, seems to be in charge all the time. And except when he gets killed and then comes back. I don't know. And I think that might be all the times that they all exploded into little bits.
So we're talking three times. The Dalek Asylum episode that the planet exploded.
Call it four just to be safe.
Yeah. So that's four times in 10 years we've had these genocidal events. I mean, it's
tiresome.
And it's an overused trope, and we don't have to wipe them out every time. It would be like Star Trek The Next Generation. Episode 3, they introduce the Borg, and episode 5, they wipe out the Borg. And then back 3 weeks later. I mean, let's just never, you know, I like this idea of the Daleks always being out there, just like, you know, the Cybermen and these other things, because they're always going to be out there. They are like cancer. They are like, you know, taxes and death. I mean, you know, they will always return. Just let's give them a rest, but let's not also, you know, do this bloody, this is the final battle, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's like
Moffat's
being programmed by the marketing department at the BBC.
But it wasn't that this time. It wasn't
It wasn't that at all,
which is, I appreciate it.
But I mean, this is the thing. We need some clarification to know, all right, well, where do these Daleks on Skaro kind of sit? Because my understanding was Skaro had been destroyed.
Mm-hmm. They rebuilt it.
They rebuilt
a planet.
They rebuilt an entire planet. They had obviously, it wasn't just Dalek Khan. It was Khan from The Search for Spock.
Hey, look, I'm not saying it makes sense. I'm just saying there are a couple things they say in address, and there's a couple things that they do. You know?
They're
on the Dr. Est, and Davros was like, yeah, they rebuilt it. I don't know if that means they took another planet, they rebuilt this one, I don't know.
Whatever, they rebuilt like an entire Dalek species one molecule at a time once. I will buy the fact that they could just put a planet back together.
I mean, at the end of the World War II episode, they're like, well, we're going to go away now, and the next time you see us, we're going to have a whole empire again. And sure enough... And they can time, like, that's the thing that gets me too, is like they can travel through time. So I don't really know.
I've always wondered
when
about
anything is happening.
I've always wondered why Missy brings it up again in this episode, like why the TARDIS is such an important thing to the Daleks. Like, and granted, the Daleks in this one are just like, let's just blow that shit up. like that, which I kind of appreciated in that first part of that episode, which is like Missy is like trying to talk her way out of it, and and she's like, the TARDIS is super important, and I am super important, and they're like, no, and they just blow it up. Because like the Daleks can clearly time travel. Like there was an entire time
right,
war
exactly,
between them.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And
I hate Russell T. Davis for that. I really do. I hate Russell T. Davis for introducing that phrase emergency temporal shift. I think it was just such a cheap plot device. And it has ruined a lot of the mystique of the Daleks. It really has, because they wanted to get into the TARDIS. They wanted time travel. And if Daleks can time travel, they will travel back to the end of time or the beginning of time, and we'll have been wiped out. Because that's what they do.
I think that's what's hinted at in the expanded. Like, I use the phrase loosely because I don't even think or know if any of it's canon.
Nobody does.
It's hinted at, especially in the Time War book, based on the War Doctor and stuff like that, that the Time Lords are stretched like crazy thin because they monitor where throughout time the Daleks go and where the incursions happen, and they just fight them all across time and space. So like in the far future, as well as back before humans were. Playing with six and stuff like that. Sure. So it's interesting. I don't know if that's something that the show just doesn't really do very well, even since Russell T. Davies was around. But like
it makes sense in the Time War, but like
without
doing that now.
Without Time Lords, right? Who would stop them from doing it now? Right. And that's kind of where it confuses me too, because I don't know where this rebuilt Skaro fits in with the whole timeline, which I know it's Doctor Who and everything like that, but I don't know. Like this comes after the Daleks had rebuilt and created a huge empire all over again. Like I don't know. It looked like there was one city on that planet. Like
I mean, going back into like if you go back into the older Doctor Who stuff and any things like that, like for Tom Baker and everything, there are other factions that fight the Daleks as well, and we see them.
No, sure, yeah. The Daleks.
But I would like to see that. I would like to see, like, the Time Agency, finally see the Time Agency, like, years after Torchwood and Jack and everything like that. It's like, there's apparently this whole human, like, sometimes right, your humans...
Well established that there's time travel all throughout, like, this universe, right? I mean... Yeah.
Even last season, we had an episode.
We had an episode, exactly! We had an episode last season where humans thought they had it figured out, and they wound up sending not Danny Pink's grandkid to,
whatever the fuck that was. Like,
the last universe, whatever.
Yeah, so that stuff is clearly happening out there, but like I would like to see that. Like there are so many stories we could do with the Daleks that involve that stuff that we just don't do because we're doing this instead. Like I liked this two-parter, on the whole I thought it was good. I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was great. It didn't blow me away. I thought it was bloated and had too much stuff, like too much filler in it, but I thought like a lot of the personal drama between the characters was great. But it's so much like the Stolen Earth or something like that, where it's just like, here's the Doctor meeting a whole bunch of Daleks and he kills a bunch of them at the end. And I really do agree with Marcus, like conceptually, just that like, if we just had smaller Dalek stories and used them in smaller ways. And then when we brought the Daleks out for, in full force, and we, it was like a showstopper season ender type thing. We had Gallifrey returning to this part of, like, out of its own little time bubble to this universe, and the Gallifreyans and the Daleks going out into all-out war. But in between, we could have episodes like Dalek, where it was just like, Daleks felt scary because, you know, you're trapped in, you're trapped somewhere with a Dalek, and you can't get away, and you can't fight them, really, because they're so hard to kill, except unless something big falls on them, because that'll... always seems to kill them. That always kind of confuses me in this episode too, where like
where the ceiling falls on them and then boom. Well, those are really heavy rocks, dude. Those rocks.
Dalekanium is, you know, their force fields are impervious to bullets and most laser blasts, but big fucking rocks, no one.
So Steven, you bring up a good point. It's like Daleks become exponentially less terrifying the more there are. Right, I mean, if you have a
more often they use the same one, the same trope. That's why they become less terrifying. It's like having steak for dinner every night. You get sick of steak.
You know, and this is what's bumming me out too. Is I feel like there's a lot of good stuff sandwiched in between the beginning and the end of this episode.
Sure, absolutely.
And it's just I think that everybody's getting kind of hung up on the what did or didn't happen with, you know, baby Davros and. What did or didn't happen with the Daleks fighting each other or the Doctor not doing genocide or whatever. But, like, I mean, you look at the, like, the kind of warped mirror version of the Doctor and the Companion story with Missy and Clara, which I thought was phenomenal. And you look at every one-on-one scene with the Doctor and Davros, which I thought was phenomenal. Like,
yes, just super strong.
For me, I agree with some of the points. I disagree with some of the points you guys are making. But I just thought all that stuff way, way elevated everything else. I really did. Like,
I think you're right. It's just like when we're talking about this stuff, in this context and stuff like that, we have to talk about like the greater overarching plot line and everything like that, because we kind of like, you know, that's sort of
I'm terrified of that again.
We have to look at what's coming, and you know, we're always thinking about what's coming and we're speculating about what's coming. It's harder to sit here and talk about how good a specific line of dialogue between Davros and the Doctor was, and there were a lot of good ones. There was the there was the line about "you're a terrible doctor," and I thought that was
brilliant. Yeah, sharing a joke and everything. I mean, it was.
Yeah, it was bringing it back to the Joker Batman analogy, like it's the killing joke. It's the end of the killing joke, which, you know, and granted. In this, it makes a little bit more sense than it did in the Killing Joke, because in the Killing Joke, like, the Joker had just shot Barbara Gordon. Spoilers for that, but
no.
Like,
dude,
I'm sorry.
1989 or whatever.
And I actually thought, like, I thought they kind of like, I mean, whether Moffat like quote unquote stole that or whatever, I think it worked way better here than it even did in that scene. And just in general, like a lot of the stuff back and forth between those characters. Like, I loved I said it earlier, but I loved the back and forth of like the Doctor's is like, Davros is like, "I've brought you here," and the Doctor's like, "Oh no, I've got control over the situation." And then Davros is like, "No, I've got control over the situation, but I really just want you to like validate me."
It
was all a trick.
And lies then like, lies and hidden plans and counter plans and
that was all fun.
Fascinating and fun. And I don't know about you guys. I like to think about how much of it was sincere. Like, I'd like to believe that some of the stuff Davros was saying to him, even though he was trying to play him the whole time, was sincere. Like the stuff with the Time Lords and about dying. Like, I really want to believe that some of that was sincerity wrapped around the fact that he thought he was going to win, so he didn't have to really play it. I don't know, because they were just
those tears.
They were just playing. What?
Davros doesn't have any Visine. He can't fake those tears.
Yeah. No Dalek Visine or whatever it would be. But, that's the stuff that I just really enjoyed. And like you said, the sharing of the laugh and the joke and him opening his eyes, which I would be very curious what Marcus thinks about that. But I've actually read some theories that he actually did that, like, as almost like a trick. Like, he can't really do that. But it was still to play into the Doctor's whole compassion and mercy side. But even the theories of what was and wasn't real, was and wasn't true, like, and genuine and everything, like, it just makes for such great conversation and great kind of thoughts on everything. So
I think, look, first of all, the Missy Clara, as I said, the Missy Clara interplay was
so good.
The high point for me. That was the real high point of the episode. That whole, you know, dull exposition that didn't make any sense at the very beginning apart. It's just the comic timing, the bickering. I mean, that's honestly what a Doctor companion relationship mm-hmm. to me has always been. And it took me back almost to the David Tennant, Donna Noble, Catherine Tate era, where it was, there was none of this romance or anything. It was just two mates having a laugh, bantering back and forth, So really like that. I mean, the fact that Clara was dumb enough to get into a fucking Dalek.
That's the same thing with all the time, Clara. Super yeah. smart, and she's super clever, and she's super on point at all times until the story needs her to just completely be the most gullible idiot.
I disagree with that. I think it's more the fact that she way too easily falls into her comfort pattern, right? Like, it's almost like she keeps forgetting that the Time Lord she's currently traipsing around with is going to kill her and is a murderous psychopath. And I think it's because they're on adventure, they're trying to save, their guy and all this other stuff, and it's way too easy to just be like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll do this thing you said you do, even though you just tried to betray me 5 minutes ago.
I think she would be smarter than to necessarily fall into that trap with the person who murdered her boyfriend in front of her 2 months ago. If this is her first time meeting Missy, I would totally 100% buy that. Like, buy this idea that, if she only knew the Master by reputation as a bad guy or something like that, and maybe she's not so bad after all, or, she's regenerated, maybe she's different now. But, she literally – and not only did she murder her boyfriend, she literally just cold cock murdered two people in front of her for no reason. And then, flaunted the fact that they had families mm-hmm. in front of her.
Rocking a hard place, bro.
And this was in the last episode, we saw Missy just go, which was delicious and it was fantastic. But, yeah, it just stuns me that Moffat still can't quite get Clara. She's been all over the place, which is a shame. But anyway, loved that. Like I said, loved most of the interplay, the back and forth. Michelle Gomez, I mean, I'm sold on her now. Yep. After last season, I know I was not happy with the last season. And I rewatched those two episodes again, and I'm still not happy with those two episodes. Mm-hmm. And I don't think she was well used. But this time around, she seems to have, really hit her stride. And the lines are snappier. The banter is there. And she's got, like I said, this just delicious bit of evil about her. I got no problems with that bit. The Dr. Davros stuff, I would have, and this is perhaps, one of the reasons perhaps I'm a little bit down on it, because some of it is so good. Yeah, I mean, the doctor turning up in Davros's, wheelchair, that was a funny moment. But then... that bit at the end, I've got no problem with Davros opening his eyes. He's a Khaled, so they had eyes. Before they mutated, and he was a Khaled scientist. So I got no problem with Davros having eyes and maybe just trying to open them. He's obviously cyber enhanced himself. The bit that would have been the great ending for me was not to have the double cross. It would have been nice just to play it at face value, where it's like this scientist who created these monsters has his moments of doubt, sees his sunset, and dies. And what we expect, because we all expected that there was the double cross, because we'd already seen the the snakes from Colony Sol, hanging in those in those wires earlier. So we knew there was a double cross coming, and we just didn't need that. I felt we didn't need that. It would have been nice mm-hmm. just to sort of go, oh, they didn't take it that extra mile, and that's actually really cool. It would have been nice just to have Davros try and reflect. And almost shock the doctor in his reflection of, I'm not a good guy. I've done this. And the doctor's one act of compassion for this dying man. And just leave it at that. And then have the doctor go back and rescue the child. That, to me, would have been perhaps a tighter ending than, but doctor, I have, I'm stealing your regeneration energy. But I knew you would do that. I mean, it's literally the end of Bill and Ted.
It is.
Dude, when I get out of this, don't forget to remind me to go and put the gun here. I mean, that's what it was. And that, to me, was just a step too far. It's almost like Moffat wanted to get over, overcomplicated or whatever. But that would have been for me the ending. And then that bit where, you know, we've got the Doctor and Clara and Missy in, you know, Clara's inside the Dalek and the Doctor's trying to figure it out. That was a great touch as well. And I think it was just, it just needed to end. You know, we could have done with a couple of minutes less of, aha, I got you. No, but I've got you too. Oh dear, but I've got you more. But no, I've got you even most of us. I mean, they might as well have slapped out their dicks.
So but, I think to me, just overall in the episode, I didn't mind the double crosses and the triple crosses and the quadruple crosses. That's always fun to me, trying to figure out who's bluffing and who's not bluffing. To me, it's the...
I mean, he looked at the snake lines. Like, at one point before he even jumped in, he was eyeing the thing. I mean...
Yep. No, to me, the only thing that was a negative to me... I mean, I actually enjoyed the story. I thought it was fun. It's the Doctor. It's, you know, there was quirkiness to it with him, you know, sitting in that office chair, spinning around in Davros's chair as if his office chair was too oiled up. So the only thing that's an issue to me is that the retconning, or the introduction of some new canonical twist, whether it's the rescuing themselves with their vortex manipulators or the Dalek poo. I almost wish just leave those out and just make a straight story using the materials you already have. I think that would have been fantastic. I mean, even if it was, you know, we've seen the dead Daleks before. We've seen the outcast Daleks before. And they were a great, the Daleks that are either too dangerous or too defeated or too sick. I think that's a great ploy. They didn't need to go this far. And then again, that whole zapping the vortex manipulator thing, it's not my bag right there. It just doesn't work. It's not feasible. Yeah, the Doctor's not supposed to be feasible. The whole show is not supposed to be feasible, but there's this level of just maintaining consistency. And whenever something like that is thrown in, it becomes very inconsistent. Because now, any death on the show now can be explained with, I just held up my vortex manipulator.
Well, wait, cool. I mean, yeah, it's a MacGuffin if you let it become one, but I'm going to assume that they're not always going to have the wrist thing. Like, I assume they're not always going to have the manipulator on. I get what you're saying, but had we seen this any time before, I would be 100% in agreement with you that it's an overused trope. We've never seen this before with the vortex manipulator.
No, like this I would have almost preferred an overused trope rather than throwing something completely new like this that warps. You know, it just seemed like it was coming out of left field. It wasn't needed. There's a better way, I think, to approach it.
I needed to jump in right here and let you guys know that I gotta duck out here pretty quickly.
All right. Before we do, Steven, what are your thoughts on Sonic sunglasses?
They're great. I mean, like, not since Google announced Google Glass have I felt more confident in a creator's ability to use wearable technology in such new and interesting ways. And with that, I'm going to log off immediately. And that's all I have to say. They're the worst. It's not going to be a running thing. I don't think it's
going to be fine.
I think it was a one-off joke, and I still think that. Like, I saw some people worried that it was actually going to be a running thing, and I'm like, no, that's not going to happen. So
out of five Sonic sunglasses, what do you give this episode?
This is a 3.5. Like, I thought there's some great moments, like, on the interior that are kind of muddled by some bad moments at the end and the beginning. Like, that's all there's to it. Like, it's tough to give it a straight score because that implies, like, a straight feeling about the episode overall, mm-hmm. whereas I really think there are some incredible highs and some, like, mediocre lows, which I think, like, puts it shy of great, sure. But definitely in the very good category.
Mm-hmm. What do you rate the two-parter overall?
That was me rating the two-parter overall. Okay. I kind of consider it all to be one big thing. Like, this season, that's kind of how I'm going to approach it.
If you watch them back-to-back, they really do flow like a nice hour and a half.
That's actually how I watched this episode, as I just watched the first episode straight into the second. So.
Good. Yeah.
That's me, though. I got to bump out.
Thanks, Steven. Bye.
Yeah, I'm going to miss you guys. I'll talk to you next week.
As for the rest of you gentlemen, what did you think about the Sonic sunglasses?
they're fine. I mean, as long as they don't become a you know, a weekly thing or whatever, and they don't become like, oh, I'm in this jam, better just tap these sunglasses that nobody knows I'm wearing, and like, it's fine. Like, if they want to be goofy for a week or two, whatever. Like, I don't.
Yep, I'm fine. I am also fine with it. I'm okay.
I mean, the screwdriver has been arguably super overused in the new show. So, you know, and I know Marcus knows this way better than even I do, but for a long time in Old Who, it wasn't even a thing, and they found ways to get rid of the screwdriver for, like, years.
Yes.
Yeah. So if they want to give him sonic glasses for a couple episodes, I'm fine with it. I don't care. There's a million billion other things that would be way worse than them just being cheeky or whatever you want to call it. So.
Definitely. Definitely.
But Marcus may disagree. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just curious for Marcus's thoughts before we wrap up the show here. Marcus?
Sonics? He really hates them.
can you hear me?
Yeah, now yes, we can hear you.
Hello.
So I think the Sonic in Capaldi's reign has actually been underused.
Okay.
It's gone from being the MacGuffin that we had during the Tennant era and Matt Smith in particular. I think, you know, those two would – that was the MacGuffin of choice. I think it's been underused or, you know, less used over the last year or so. And I'm kind of fine with that. Yeah, I think he's just having a mess around. I would hate to see it become, you know, Sonic glasses. But look, I mean, when he put the glasses on and he was looking around, I mean, I had flashbacks to, again, the Doctor Who episodes where David Tennant would put on the 3D glasses and you could see all the timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly residue. From
oh,
the
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I kind of flashbacks to that. I don't think they're Sonic glasses. And as long as they, you know, use it for a couple of episodes, give him a new Sonic, get it over with, and that will all be good, because I'm sorry, glasses cannot do this.
Sonic, what color would you make his new Sonic, Marcus?
Well, we've had blue for Tennant, and we've had green for Smith. I kind of like the idea of, you know, going red, maybe going old school Tom Baker,
Darth Maul-ish.
Well, you know, I mean, this is the one who was supposed to be nearer to the Tom Baker era anyway.
And so they've thrown a lot of Tom Baker-isms over the last couple of years of Doctor Who, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, look, I got we'll see it. We'll see how it goes. I mean, I'm still waiting for Sonic Underpants.
you don't have to wait, my friend. Talk to me after the show. I got you.
Hey.
Did you guys ever see the fan art of Capaldi holding the purple screwdriver?
No.
Posted here, and then if anybody wants to just Google it, Peter Capaldi purple screwdriver. Wow. It's fake, you know, and I think somebody photoshopped in Rivers Sonic, but I thought it looked pretty awesome, actually. So
purple's good.
Purple and red, I think, would be purple or red, I should say.
What before we get too far, before we shut down the show, which
fine,
doctor
buy a new Sonic anyway?
Yeah, exactly. Which doctor outfit do you guys like? Do you like the kind of the purple overcoat with the red linings up for Capaldi, or do you like his new blue hoodie look?
I like the more the classic one we saw last year. I don't like him looking like he's just bounced on stage at the Xbox press conference.
I do have to say, if you're looking for Sonic screwdrivers, head on over to Barnes & Noble this week. All of their Sonic screwdrivers are on clearance, 50% off. They're clearing out. So, because I was just there a couple days ago, and I bought myself the interchangeable Sonic screwdriver. So definitely go check it out. Yeah.
What's an interchangeable Sonic screwdriver go for?
A bunch of with that 50% off and my 10% off discount on top of it, I think it was something like $7.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's like three Sonic screwdrivers that you can interchange into all variety of different ways.
You can build River Sonic with
that. Yes. They even had the other Doctor's Sonic screw, the War Doctor Sonic screwdriver there. So that
I've never even
cool.
seen that interchangeable That's, one.
Yeah, the interchangeable one is cool.
You haven't seen that?
No.
I'll have to send you pictures.
I mean, if you go to Amazon, you can buy all the Sonics, but I don't see the interchangeable stuff. Huh. Pretty cool. Thanks for the tip there.
There you go. Really, there isn't much. What are your final thoughts on the episode?
Well, I haven't given my score yet.
Nor mine.
I haven't given mine either.
So I'm going to go with a 3 for this episode because, like I said, there were some very high points, but there was all, you know, there was some really delicious interaction and some potential. But I think it just the other bits kind of dragged it down for me. So I would go 3 for this episode, 3.5 for the two-parter in general. Not, you know, it was well above average, especially above what we got in the first couple of episodes last year.
I was gonna say that's very generous coming from you.
Yeah, I
don't hate Doctor Who. I mean, I want it to be great. I mean, I'm sure gonna be tough on it because I love it.
Uh-huh. I like Marcus. I think this is a stronger start this year to Doctor Who than it was last year. Yes. I'm gonna give this episode a 3.5. It went up from the 3 I had last week because I felt there were moments in this where I laughed out loud at that at the "you're a bad doctor" line. I thought that was brilliant. There was great Dr. Davros interplay, Doctros, Missy and Clara were great. If it wasn't for just a few little things, you know, I'm gonna push this up to a 4. I'm saying I'm pushing it up to a 4. If it wasn't for just a few little things here and there, I thought this was a phenomenal. I thought it was a really fun episode, and it's, to me, it's great. Doctor Who is trending upward, and I'm happy. And again, I'm glad Davros is back. I'm glad Missy is back because now we have some big bads that
They'll be around.
And you know they'll be around. Yeah, and
Missy not show anybody die on screen. Well, especially with Missy, right?
And then, we know. Yeah,
that's a clever idea. So,
just a heads up that LEGO Dimensions came out yesterday.
Yes.
I have the Xbox One version sitting here. I haven't started at it yet because I'm not going to open it until till I get the Doctor One at the end of November.
I do have to say, if I just get the Doctor Who pack, then but I have heard that the Doctor Who levels within the actual main game are pretty fantastic.
Yeah, the Doctor Who stuff was actually done specifically by a bunch of Telltale, Traveller's Tales fans.
Yes.
Up in Manchester. I talked to Arthur Parsons a lot, who's one of the creative directors, and yeah, he was saying that Stephen Sharples was the guy who was behind a lot of the Doctor Who stuff this time around, and he's a confirmed Whovian, and those guys are nuts for it over there. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they've done with it.
Sean, what is your score and your kind of final thoughts?
I'm going to give a 4.
Excellent.
For the whole shebang. And I think I covered it pretty well. I was a fan of a lot more than I was – not a fan, and I disagree with some of Marcus and Steven's kind of detractions, but at the same time, I agree with some too. Yeah. But I think that there was way more good than bad. I think that, Capaldi is firmly in the role now and is more comfortable than at any point he was last season. Mm-hmm. And that's not a knock on last season, but, like everything with time.
All the different Daleks from different eras in these two episodes. They had stuff from
I thought it was great
era to last season.
All over time and space, or who in space, I guess, right?
Definitely.
But I really liked it, and I'm very curious to see if they can keep the momentum, because there were definitely times last year and in previous Moffat seasons where, they might dip way, way high or soar way, way high in terms of quality and then dip way low. Consistency does not seem to be his strongest suit. So we will see. But I'm very excited. I'm also very curious what they do with Clara because she's just – I don't know.
I
think they got to kill her off. She's got to the stage now. They need to give her go Adric on her ass.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. And I mean, and I know we're kind of out of time today, but I would be very curious.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go, because mine's just a really quick thing I want to touch on next week.
No, I was going to say, I still think she's going to get back to Danny Pink somehow.
Yeah, what?
I think that her conclusion is getting back with getting Danny Pink back somehow.
The Doctor's going to open the rift and send her into another universe with another Danny Pink.
Mom. There you go.
I would love nothing more than to her be sent out to another universe. But I'd also love some sort of wrap up to the whole Danny Pink from future space time traveler thing, because that still bugs me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. What if he was a sperm donor? What if he donated? He'd actually donated sperm.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make sense because the TARDIS was hotwired to Clara's timeline. So.
Well, perhaps she donated her eggs and he donated his sperm, and who knows?
There you go.
He stuck it in the TARDIS engines.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, I'm also curious next week to see what the ratings are like, because there's some, you know, doom and gloom stories out there that it's only pulling in like 3.57 or 4 on the overnights when it used to do 6 or 7. So
the ratings have just been updated as of today, as of a short while ago, and they were pretty phenomenal. I think they were third best overall for the
night. Good. Yeah, and it's a conversation about how
broke records in the U.S.
They're just nonsense these days. So very good.
Broke records in the U.S. and it was like third best overall for that day specifically, or that weekend, whatever it was in the U.K. So it did really good. It did good.
I think you got to remember, in the U.K. right now, it's up against the Great British Bake Off, which is a juggernaut. And then the BBC is not helping it. I mean, it's almost like we're going back to the bad old days of the late 70s, mid 80s, where the BBC is shuffling it around to cater to other shows, so it's not getting a regular time slot.
Which is crazy.
But when you factor in, the rest of the world and BBC America, and the fact that you can see it, like I said, I watched this last year's season opener in Honduras.
Yeah.
And it was, it was on the same time as it was, in the US. So I don't think we have too much to worry about.
Yeah, and plus, more and more people are watching, on iPlayer or DVR or whatever, too, right? I mean, there's so many new metrics, too.
The iPlayer and the DVR is what they were able to actually track in the UK, and it bumped those numbers up pretty big time.
Good, as it should. Okay, cool.
A few quick comments from our fantastic listeners. Alan Paxson on Twitter says, did they do it? Did they crack the code? Episode 2 started strong, and in my honest opinion, kept the momentum from episode 1. Missy was on point, and the Doctor didn't fall back into the overly dark places of season 8. I'm way more confident in the season going forward. Chris Newnham, at Newnham, says, fairly decent conclusion. I actually enjoyed Missy and Clara's scenes this time. I think all of us did. I have renewed hope for the season. There's a lot of positivity flowing. Annalie, of course, super fan Annalie, says, I felt that was a good part two. I do have a couple questions, but as a whole, great performances by all. I love Capaldi, but is Gomez a great bit of casting? Heart. Her cool circular narrative with Clara. Davros and Doctor, wow. Fun, not too dark. TMA plus TWF, 4 out of 5 Daleks. And then a couple more here. We have Kostich, who says, actually he retweeted Geeka, and Geeka says, have decided that Clara would be a wonderful companion for Missy. Very true, very true. Weird fiction fan at Scott Nixon says, I liked it a lot, especially putting Clara inside of a Dalek. And finally, again, Kostich says, much better than episode 1. Interaction between Davros and the Doctor was magic. At Savior Prodigy says, great episode. Interaction between Davros and Doctor was amazing. Really felt the emotion. And finally, Aubrey T, or at Sabeo_FF, says, finally brought back the conniving master. Shoving Clara in a Dalek was a rather tense callback to Asylum. I agree. And Sonic sunglasses? There's a lot of positivity going into Doctor Who. A lot of fun things from this week, these last two episodes, or these first two episodes. It's a shorter season this year. We only have 10 episodes left. And then we got a great, supposedly great Christmas episode, I hope. But a lot to look forward to. Let's keep things amazing and positive. And then also, just one quick final note. They found water on Mars. They announced, NASA did. So
bad move.
The Moab. We know where this is heading, folks.
Yes, indeed. I don't know what it is about British sci-fi over the last week or so, but if you watch Black Mirror, David Cameron sticking his naughty bits in a pig's mouth, and then the waters of Mars today. It's kind of crazy. One thing I will say that we didn't get a chance to talk about, but I think it's something that would have come up, had we not been off air, because Doctor Who's been off air. But Funko released a range of Doctor Who toys, the Pop Funkos, of which I have procured. I mean, obviously, when I saw them, I went nuts and bought the fucking lot.
They're your amiibo, aren't they?
I don't do amiibo. I mean, between Dimensions and Disney Infinity, I can't do any others. But I got to say, the Funkos are actually really cool. I've got a bunch of them. Their Weeping Angel in particular is kind of fantastic.
So yeah, if you want to check those out, I thoroughly recommend getting some of those because they're great. I mean, look, I love the Funko stuff. Right now, I have a Dalek standing next to RoboCop. So
excellent.
That's cool.
I have yet to say the Cyberman looks phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, Marcus went to go play with them. I think
Funko are brilliant. I love that Funko do these, and yes. I'm glad that BBC America have moved off to or BBC Worldwide and now dealing with Funko because the stuff that they were doing before was really quite dodgy.
They're finally doing some good licensing. BBC Worldwide is with Lego Funko. Yep. What was that?
Oh no, I was just saying. I hope they make more Doctors. So far, there's four Doctors: the 4th, the 10th, 11th, and 12th.
Yep.
And I have the 10th, 11th. Well, but I would absolutely pick up 9, 8, or I'd pick up all of them because I'm a pop junkie.
So. Mm-hmm. Oh, and the comics are phenomenal. Again, I mentioned, the 8th Doctor comic book series is now out. So you have the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th Doctor. You have there was a series which had the War Doctor, a mini series had the War Doctor in it. It's phenomenal. There's so many great Doctor Who things starting to happen right now.
And next year, Big Finish.
It's Big Finish.
And Noble.
Yep. And it's all wonderful news. We're actually potentially getting some Big Finish stuff, which I'll talk to you gents after the show. Cool. Yeah, where can you find us? You can find us at LonelyTardis.com, at LonelyTardis on the Twitters. Please go to iTunes and Stitcher and anywhere that there are podcasts and download, rate, review, share. It's phenomenal when I see people, when we see people, I should say, sharing Lonely Tardis and mentioning it to their friends. I had a couple folks that tweeted this week that said, hey, you should check out Lonely Tardis. It's a great podcast.
Yes, That was really, really cool.
It's really cool. Thank you, everybody, for doing that. We totally appreciate it. Yes. Because we do it because we love we're basically talking to all of you. I've gotten to know a bunch of basically everybody that tweets at Lonely Tardis I end up chatting with on a regular occasion. So it's great. Great times. You can find me personally at Dolly Domofsky. You can find Steven at Steven Strum. I'm not going to do his stupid little song and dance. Where can you find Sean Norton?
At Sean Norton, S-H-A-U-N-N-O-R-T-O-N.
And Marcus, where can we find you?
You can find me at Annoyed Gamer. And I will say, look, that's one of the things. We don't see a lot of the questions. If we don't follow you guys out there, when you tweet questions at Lonely Tardis, Dali's the only one who sees them because Dali runs the account. So if you want to sort of like loop us in, or even just retweet the question to us, retweet a link so that next week's episode we can have some of your questions in mind as well, so that we can all be prepped, and perhaps we can have a longer discussion on the episode and what you guys think, as opposed to why Stephen Moffat is a twonk.
Definitely.
Or isn't as bad as Mark Meeks.
Yes.
On that note,
we'll see everybody. Take care. Ooh.
Bye.